silicone ice cube tray. And each square of the ice cube tray is photographed individually and then constructed into this 9-foot structure. One of them is black. The center of the cubes you can't see into, so it almost looks like a drawing. Each cube is articulated almost like having its own shelf since it's oriented on the wall.
So these are giant photos, and you're looking at a grid, basically, mm-hmm. made up of an ice cube tray. So each horizontal, there's no perspective on it, right?
There's multiple individual perspectives.
Right. But there's no, like, none of them are at an angle the higher up they are or lower down. It's like you're level with all of them.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right, which is kind of disturbing, really.
It's a little impossible if you were looking at it and holding it in your hand and looking down at something that contains that many individual compartments.
Mm-hmm.
So photographically, each one is recorded on its own. So when you see it, you get to see, I think it's about 12 different single point perspectives all coming at you at once.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are two of these are kind of companion pieces. And in one of them, the middle where the ice would be is just jet black. And how did you do that?
It's the same ice cube tray, just lit differently, viewed differently and thought about differently. It's the only thing that has changed between the two is the approach and perspective. The object is the same. And in a lot of my work, what I'm trying to represent isn't so much the object, but the consideration of the object, which can be different when you make it, and it can be different each time you as a viewer come to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a little bit different. And it's a reflective process.
Mm-hmm. Then inside the show, there are three other large photos. I mean, the most striking one is two gigantic, separately framed horizontal pictures. And they're of this like a case that holds a tool, that black foam. Mm-hmm. And it's the impression of the tool. So there's nothing in there. There's just this indentation shaped mm-hmm. like the outline of a tool. And that's just untitled. So what is it a picture of?
It's literally representing the object I was working with is a sterret 6-inch caliper that measures in the 100,000ths of an inch. So it's a device for extreme difference knowing. The device is taken out, which leaves this soft, almost gun case foam void. And that's in the lower half of the diptych. And the top half is just the foam lid opened. And I think seeing it today, it looks a bit like a starry night. It looks a little bit like the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And below seems reminiscent of a coffin or some sort of resting place
mm-hmm.
where the object is no longer viewed, just the structure of it. And the whole thing is a real beautiful part that brought me to that contemplation is the very red border of the case. So the entire image is black and white with this intense, deep red border.
Mm-hmm. What is that red? Because as I looked at it, I thought, is this silicon? Or it looks like caulking, like you put between uh-huh. around a bath. And it's uneven.
It is the red of the case. The case is red, so you're seeing the very border lip that would close and snap shut. But I think it's a little more sinister than what the manufacturer meant. And any of these objects I'm going to work with are sort of taken as suggestive imagery, and I leave truth at the door to build something that reflects my mood and my contemplation and my relationship with the world and myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, I think that one's about death. I think that one's about being underground, literally the part that represents the figure is the lower half, and you sort of have to tip your head a few degrees to look at it, and then to look at the rest of the piece, you would raise your head and look up at that night sky.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the work that's in the show at the Portland Art Museum is about, for me, those two great boundaries, those two great borders, birth and death.
Right.
And then what happens in between.
Right. And that just brought to mind another of your pieces that isn't in the show, but it's it looks like a giant mirror, almost like an IKEA mirror, at an angle, kind of horizontal, at an angle in a gallery. And as you look at it, you're seeing what looks like a reflection of the wooden floor. But mm-hmm. in fact, it's not a mirror at all. What is it?
That's a site-specific photograph. I was trying to bring the photograph and the object it's representing as close as I could. And so what you're looking at in that piece is I've photographed the floor, and then I've made this 13-foot-long photograph, mounted it in a frame, but tipped it off the wall so it suggests a mirror reflecting the floor. So from one spot in the gallery, you would be able to hold that fiction,
mm-hmm.
that belief that what you're seeing is a true representation. And from everywhere else in the gallery, if you move left or right, that optical illusion, that belief system mm-hmm. is going to fall apart, or at least you will see the warped nature of it.
Yeah.
From different points of view.
Another piece at the Portland Art Museum is a sink, big white sink with the mm-hmm. plug-in. Where is that sink?
I actually showed that piece to my kids when I had finished it, and my son didn't know where it was from. Mm-hmm. And it's this bathroom sink that he brushes his teeth in, mm-hmm. and my daughter brush their teeth in every night. But they didn't know where it was from. They thought it was a belly button. They thought it was something completely fabricated.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a picture of a sink. I think it's suggestive of a seascape. The white recedes and almost goes to infinite space. The little drain at the bottom of the image looks a little bit like a sun over the water. And the overflow valve, the overflow protection, is a bit of a reflection of that drain. That was the very last piece in the show at Elizabeth Leach Gallery titled Funeral. There were a number of dark images preceding that work, and that was the last image, kind of an image that holds romance or promise,
mm-hmm.
Optimism, and potential.
The fifth piece in the show is a cabinet with the doors off. It's a medicine cabinet, a white one, kind of, I think, very familiar to anyone in the Northwest. And it's the same perspective thing where the shelves look as though they're eye level, whether it's the middle one or the one below. But the top and the bottom have a bit of perspective, right? You can see into the corners. Was that constructed the same way by multiple shots?
So it was made by multiple photographs from multiple depths, from moving the camera left and right. You could do the same if you, at home or wherever you are, consider an object and move your head slightly to the left and slightly to the right and build that understanding up over time. So with that medicine cabinet, that's the medicine cabinet I see every morning I brush my teeth. Usually it's just a medicine cabinet that holds toothpaste and toothbrushes and deodorant, but on another occasion, it can be called upon to try to be a place of contemplation, a sacred place.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hold that very long. It goes back to being a medicine cabinet after a while, but for the time that I'm working with it, it's incredibly important to me. And that one is built by photographing the border to get a sense of depth. But then the camera follows and records as it follows at dead center view on the shelves. So you never see the top of a shelf or the bottom of a shelf. It's represented as line drawing for lack of better description. So trying to hold photography as a representative medium for the world and also a very personal and subjective expression as drawing would be.
So all of these pieces, you're taking very common objects that we all know, and you're suggesting to people, look at them. I thought at first it was, look at these up close, because you can zoom right in. The detail is incredible. But there's another thing you're kind of suggesting, right, about the way people could look at things differently.
I used to travel to try to go work, and I don't do that much anymore. I stick to my house.
Travel, yeah. Where?
Oh, it's easy to put off art. It's easy to put off art. Work, and I would be example one of procrastination. My studio is in my house, though, so I don't really escape it. Always around, mm-hmm. and there's some consequences to the family. Like if I'm working in the bathroom, they can't use the bathroom for a month, or they
a could, month
for a month. We'll have to go to the neighbor's house, or we'll have to cook dinners somewhere else if I'm working in the kitchen, or if it's very, very loud because I'm building picture frames in the basement and the dust collection is running. There's consequences to my actions, but there's also, you know, those moments of difficulty, you feel pretty alive and you feel pretty engaged. And I don't take my family's patience and inconvenience for granted. I've decided that wherever I am, that's my studio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I end up contemplating ice cube trays and medicine cabinets and sinks.
Right. So you've made a conscious decision to work from home, or to work at home.
Well, the conscious decision was to not give myself the time off or the weekends to say I'm not at the studio.
Right.
So I'm always at the studio.
Right.
So I don't really have a house anymore. And I think that's for the better.
Yeah, you actually, at the museum when you did your lecture, you showed pictures of your home because yeah. People are so curious. Like, where is this sink really? And you're like, here it is, you know, and it's full of dirty dishes. And it was kind of surprising. As photographs, they're so orderly, the images, but seeing them in your home in use, they were not like professional photos. They were like, you took them in the morning just to show people.
Yeah, I took the photographs this morning. Kind of as a real authentic core sample of what my environment is, because there's one way I live, then there's the things I attempt to make. I'm trying to celebrate the fabrication of grand vistas and connections with yourself as self-knowledge, and connections with the way your life has spectacular beauty, even when you're walking by it in the morning and it's full of dirty dishes, or all the paint is chipped. That can be a source of disappointment and a source of clutter and cloudy frustration. It could also be the very first steps of some of the most soul-enriching personal exploration.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Isaac Lehman. His work is on show now at the Portland Art Museum as part of the 2013 Contemporary Northwest Art Awards. He's known for his digital photo compositions, which are based on everyday objects such as cupboards, sinks, and cutting boards. So, Isaac, you work from home, and you probably spend a lot of time in front of the computer. What kind of music do you listen to when you're working?
I'm usually drawn to soulful music. Just anything by Townes Van Zandt would be, that's a good example of somebody who's talking about maybe the complicated parts of their life, the messy parts of their life, and sharing it and making something really beautiful out of it. So those are calming, inspirational, real music. And I also love to, if I'm building picture frames and I need to power through an evening, I'll try to find some horribly vulgar rap. Andre Nicotina, I'll listen to. Eminem, listen to Jay-Z.
And you've brought in a track today, Father, Father by Laura Mavula. And let's give that a listen.
Father, to fight, don't let me go. You've gone too far from what I know.
That was Father Father by Laura Mavula. And Isaac, what was it you like about that?
Her voice is beautiful, and the calling out for connection and disappointment, it seems to be acknowledged in that song, and longing. Those are kind of inescapable challenges for the human experience.
So you had a show earlier this year at Liz Leach Gallery called Funeral, and there were some things in it that weren't photos. I was a bit surprised. There was one of them, it was a triptych. One was a piece of MDF, which is kind of cream-colored particle board, I think. Some kind of synthetic wood. And then there was another one, which was foam core, which is that white stuff you can make posters out of. And then there was midsole, which is this black sole of a shoe, that rubbery material. And each of them was a square, and there were sort of two facing each other and one adjacent. And I didn't know what was going on there.
Just after high school, instead of going to college, I traveled and I went to Egypt and I took a tour of the pyramids at Giza. And the image in the Elizabeth Leach show Funeral, each of those objects, the height and width of the frame is in relationship to the height and width of the burial chamber of Khufu's pyramid. And in that space, it was a gorgeous experience. And so I wanted to have that height and width represent that architectural space, but also have it be a portal that you sort of look past the glass at the object on the other side, albeit in those three pieces, it doesn't look like there's very much in the frame, which I think disappointment's just it's an absolutely helpful thing to stand in front of once in a while. Because if you find disappointment in the initial read of the piece, or maybe the final read in the piece, trusting your judgment is empowering. And in that piece, you can decide just to hate it if you want. But there's those three pieces work as MDF kind of has this kind of it's manufactured medium density fiberboard, so it's not really real except that we made it, and so it kind of represents the body, and made it an image of, and the midsole is black, and kind of represents that soul that has darkness, you know, has difficulty, and then the final piece is archival foam core, which has a white kind of pristine hope and desire for some flawless environment. And so those three pieces are kind of materials to help that soul's journey.
In the same show, there was a cutting board, a white plastic one with a little gutter around the edge and chop marks. And you didn't just take a picture of it from above or with lighting on one angle. Just tell us how you took the picture.
The show Funeral was about the potentially transformative experience of loss, reconciliation, and renewal. And that particular piece is right across, was hung directly across from this piece that seems, it's referred to as the fish piece. And so there's a cutting board, and then there's the body on the other side. The cutting board piece, the art piece kind of looks like marble or alabaster. It was a plastic cutting board. And the middle of it has a lot of striations from all of the cutting that's happened on it, and it's stained it, and it's kind of turned it kind of a beige color. Around the outside, there's a reflection off of the blood gutter around the frame, and it's sort of built in a sense of picture framing into the work, but with an impossibly directed light. The light comes from all four sides of the picture frame. So there's a bit of a all-knowing or divine light that's attempting to articulate this place of honor, sacrifice, nourishment.
I'm thinking about your pictures. You have one of a stove where the perspective is from the center of each burner, so all four of them look as though you're right above them. Physically, how do you shoot? Do you have like a crane thing holding the camera up, or are you using your arms or what?
I've got a 4x5 camera with, and I've got a number of different cameras, but based on the project, that image was built with moving the refrigerator out of the room and into the dining room to get space around the stove. And I brought in my studio lights. So the whole room starts to feel very artificial.
Mm-hmm. It's like an ad. It's like you're shooting an ad, right?
It is. It looks like it's forensic. One thing is incredibly important and everything else is sacrificed. More light than you would think is necessary comes into the room. I bring my computers down to the room and I have a portable camera stand with a 4x5 camera out over an arm, and it's directly above the stove. So mm-hmm. it's shooting directly on top of the center point of one of the four burners, and then I did all four that way. So it's a very uncomfortable image to stand in front of because all four burners are asking for your undivided attention. They each hold their own or advocate for their own contemplation. So, and this burner is an electric coil burner. So there's a bit of a pinball sort of feel as your eye gets lobbied for its attention to one part of the stove.
Is that 4x5 film camera?
It's a 4x5 digital. That camera is a scanning back that I bought off of eBay. It's sort of the beginning of digital photography. So the lights can't change and the camera can't be bumped for somewhere between 3 and 30 minutes. As it's almost like putting a flatbed scanner in the back of your camera. It doesn't take a single image. It takes 8,000 one pixel wide, 8,000 pixel tall photographs, and then puts them together after mm-hmm. the fact.
And that's to get one burner, to get one quarter of the the stove.
Okay. And I might take 100 of those.
Right. So putting them all together in Photoshop, presumably?
Correct.
Yeah. It must be a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I almost think of the shooting of it is when the opportunity to run through Toys R Us with your shopping cart and just take whatever you want and explore all of the options. I kind of shoot that way. Digital is very inexpensive. My time, although limited in those environments, I spend it like it's free. And so I collect, and I collect a lot. It's really pretty simple. It's just taking individual pictures and bringing them very close together or in a stack, erasing part of it so you can see the image below. And then you just start cobbling together kind of a memory, a fabrication, a conjured vision of what you're looking for.
You must be an Adobe power user.
I've got my share of hard drives. I mean, there's some people that use Photoshop and do some incredibly sophisticated work with their images. Mine's pretty rudimentary. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I need to do is move pictures very close together and then erase parts of them. I just use the part of Photoshop that I need.
Mm-hmm. Are you influenced by Andrew Sikorsky?
I am, yeah. I love his work. And it's not the work that I make. There's a reflection on world systems and there's a grandeur and gorgeous experience to stand in front of his work. But mine is more personally inquisitive of the personal instead of the community.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised, you know, when I saw his picture of a dollar store in Germany or a feedlot, and then to find out that it was actually Photoshop, like he he reproduced some of the images, and he did have a thing with perspective, but I think he was in many places like cloning things, and I was kind of surprised that he would do that, but it seems to be fairly normal now.
Because you had a kind of a trust in the eye of the camera.
Yeah.
Sanctity of the eye of the camera, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I relate photography to constructed arguments. So if you're having a conversation with somebody about politics, say, that person's going to construct arguments and they're going to make a case for their perspective. It's going to be a created perspective. And so I don't see a problem with photography representing creative perspectives. I think it really always has, whether it was cloned or cropped a particular way. Truth in photography is always a really enjoyable conundrum. and to negotiate on a case-by-case basis.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Isaac Lehman, whose work is now on show at the Portland Art Museum as part of the 2013 Contemporary Northwest Art Awards. Isaac's work will be shown by the Liz Leach Gallery at the Pulse Art Fair in Miami this month of December. Thank you for coming in, Isaac.
Thank you very much. Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
This KBOO program had been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Native American Youth and Family Center's Microenterprise Program, presenting the Naya Marketplace, where Northwest Native small business vendors and artisans display beadwork, jewelry, pottery, and more, Saturday, December 7th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard. Information at nayapdx.org. Vendor information by email to cjw@nayapdx.org. And by the Oregon College of Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
And now, the KBOO News at Noon. I'm Jenka Soderberg. Hundreds of thousands of refugees are currently on the run from the Central African Republic, but the conflict has garnered very little international media attention. The ongoing violence began this March when elected President Francois Bozize was overthrown in a coup. The United Nations has estimated that close to 400,000 people have been internally displaced from the Central African Republic since March. Protests are planned this Friday at over 1,500 Walmart stores across the U.S. Workers in several cities began the week of protest yesterday by walking off the job in protest of low wages and lack of benefits. The walkouts came directly on the heels of the resignation of Walmart's CEO. The company is the largest employer in the U.S., but most workers say that the company has failed to pay them a living wage. Organizers with Our Walmart say that if the company took some of the annual profits that it currently uses to buy up its own stock and reinvest it in its lowest paid workers, they could all receive a $5 an hour raise without a cost to the company. Last week, the National Labor Relations Board filed an official complaint against Walmart for allegedly retaliating against workers involved in union organizing. Local protests will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday at the Walmart on Southeast 82nd Avenue. Also this Friday, workers at the Fubon Shopping Center in Southeast Portland are organizing a protest accusing their employers of wage theft. Workers say they have been forced to work off the clock, to work under dangerous conditions, and working mothers have been refused proper breastfeeding breaks. Workers and their supporters will hold a Black Friday picket in front of the grocery store located on Southeast 82nd Avenue. That protest will take place at 1:30 p.m. this Friday. Portland's city auditor has issued a statement that the city needs a way for whistleblower complaints to be investigated. Currently, these complaints are reported, but there's no official process for investigation. The announcement came after the city's chief administrative officer, Jack Graham, was fired for a misallocation of Water Bureau funds, among other issues. That incident was pointed out by whistleblowers in the city administration, but no follow-up was done at the time. For more local, national, and international news, tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News, produced by volunteer reporters right here in our Portland studios.